Part 1. Why meditate? Take a sincere look at yourself. Where are you in your life? What have your priorities been up till now? And what do you intend doing with the time you have left? We are a mixture of light and shadow, of good qualities and faults. Are we really the best we can be? Must we remain as we are now? If not, what can we do to improve ourselves? These are questions worth asking, particularly if we have come to the conclusion that change is both desirable and possible. In the West, we are consumed from morning till night by endless activity. We do not have much time or energy left over to consider the basic causes of our happiness or suffering. We imagine, more or less consciously, that if we undertake more activities, we will have more intense experiences, and therefore our sense of dissatisfaction will fade away. But the truth is that many of us continue to feel let down and frustrated by our contemporary lifestyle. The aim of meditation is to transform the mind. It does not have to be associated with any particular religion. Every one of us has a mind, and every one of us can work on it. Is change desirable? There are very few people who would say that there is nothing worth improving in the way they live and experience the world. However, some people think their own particular weaknesses and conflicting emotions are something rich that contributes to the fullness of their lives. They believe this particular alchemy in their character is what makes them unique, and think they should learn to accept themselves the way they are. They do not realize that this kind of thinking can lead to a life of chronic discontent. Nor do they realize that they could help themselves with just a little reflection and effort. Imagine someone suggested you spend an entire day tormented by jealousy. Would you want to do that? I doubt it. If, on the other hand, someone suggested you spend that same day with your heart filled with love for all beings, you would probably be quite willing to do so. I'm sure you would find that infinitely preferable to a whole day of jealousy. As things stand now, no matter what our preferences might be, our mind is often filled with troubles. We spend a great deal of time consumed by painful thoughts, plagued by anxiety or anger, licking the wounds we receive from other people's harsh words. When we experience these kinds of difficult moments, we wish we could manage our emotions. We wish we could master our mind to the point where we could be free of these afflicting emotions. It would be such a relief. However, since we don't know how to achieve this kind of control, we take the point of view that, after all, this way of living is normal or natural, and that it is human nature. Even if it were natural, that would not make it desirable. Illness, for example, comes to everybody, but does this prevent us from consulting a doctor? We don't want to suffer. Nobody wakes up in the morning and thinks, "Oh, if I could only suffer all day today, and if possible, every day for the rest of my life." Whatever we are occupied with, an important task, routine work, walking in the woods, pursuing a relationship, drinking a cup of tea, we always hope we will get some benefit or satisfaction out of it, either for ourselves or others. If we thought nothing would come of our activities but suffering, we wouldn't do anything at all, and we would fall into despair. Sometimes we do have moments of inner peace, of altruistic love, of deep felt confidence, but for the most part, these are only fleeting experiences that quickly give way to other less pleasant ones. What if we could train our mind to cultivate these wholesome moments? No doubt it would radically change our lives for the better. Wouldn't it be wonderful to become better human beings and lead lives in which we experience inner fulfillment, while also relieving the suffering of others and contributing to their well-being? Some people think life would be dull without inner conflict, but we are all familiar with the suffering that accompanies anger, greed, or jealousy, and we all appreciate the good feelings that go along with kindness, contentment, and the pleasure of seeing other people happy. The sense of harmony that is connected with loving others has an inherent goodness in it that speaks for itself. The same is true of generosity, patience, emotional balance, and many other positive traits. If we could learn to cultivate altruistic love and inner calm, and if, at the same time, the self-centered approach of the ego and the frustration that arises from it could be reduced, then our lives certainly would not lose any of their richness. Quite the opposite. Is change possible? So the real question is not whether change is desirable, it is whether it is possible to change. Some people might think they can't change because their afflictive emotions are so intimately associated with their minds that it is impossible to get rid of them without destroying a part of themselves. It is true that in general people's characters don't change very much. If we could study the same group of people every few years, we would rarely find that the angry people had become patient, that the disturbed people had found inner peace, or that the pretentious people had learned humility. But as rare as such changes might be, some people do change, which shows that change is possible. The point is that our negative character traits tend to persist if we don't do anything to change the status quo. No change occurs if we just let our habitual tendencies and automatic patterns of thought perpetuate, and even reinforce themselves, thought after thought, day after day, year after year. But those tendencies and patterns can be challenged. Aggression, greed, jealousy, and the other mental poisons are unquestionably part of us. But are they an inalienable part? Not necessarily. For example, a glass of water might contain cyanide that could kill us on the spot. But the same water could also be mixed with healing medicine. In either case, H2O, the chemical formula of the water itself, remains unchanged. In itself, it was never either poisonous or medicinal. The different states of the water are temporary and circumstantial. Our emotions, moods, and bad character traits are just temporary and circumstantial elements of our nature. A fundamental aspect of consciousness. This temporary and circumstantial quality becomes clear to us when we realize that the primary quality of consciousness, which is comparable to the water in the previous example, is simply knowing. Knowing in itself is neither good nor bad. If we look behind the turbulent stream of transient thoughts and emotions that pass through our mind day and night, this fundamental aspect of consciousness, knowing, which makes possible and underlies all perception, no matter what its nature, is always there. Buddhism describes this knowing aspect of the mind as luminous, because it illuminates both the external world and the inner world of sensation, emotion, reasoning, memory, hope, and fear. Although this faculty of knowing underlies every mental event, it is not itself affected by any of these events. A ray of light may shine on a face disfigured by hatred, or on a smiling face. It may shine on a jewel or on a garbage heap. But the light itself is neither mean nor loving, neither dirty nor clean. Understanding that the essential nature of consciousness is neutral permits us to understand that it is possible to change our mental universe. We can transform the content of our thoughts and experiences. The neutral and luminous background of our consciousness provides us with the space we need to observe mental events, rather than being at their mercy, and then to create the conditions necessary to transform them. Just wishing is not enough. We have no choice about what we already are, but we can wish to change ourselves. Such an aspiration can give the mind a sense of direction, but just wishing is not enough. We have to find a way of putting that wish into action. We don't find anything strange about spending years learning to walk, to read and write, or to acquire professional skills. We spend hours doing physical exercises in order to get our bodies fit. Sometimes we expend tremendous physical energy pedaling a stationary bike that goes nowhere. To sustain such tasks, we have to have a minimum of interest or enthusiasm. This interest comes from feeling that in the long run, these efforts are going to benefit us. Working with the mind follows the same logic. How could it be subject to change without the least effort, just from wishing alone? That doesn't make any more sense than expecting to learn to play a Mozart sonata just by occasionally doodling around on the piano. We expend a lot of effort to improve the external conditions of our lives. But in the end, it is always the mind that creates our experience of the world and translates it into well-being or suffering. If we transform our way of perceiving things, we transform the quality of our lives. It is this kind of transformation that is brought about by the form of mind training known as meditation. What is meditation? Meditation is a practice that makes it possible to cultivate and develop certain basic positive human qualities, in the same way as other forms of training make it possible to play a musical instrument or acquire any other skill. The words that are translated into English as meditation are bhavana from Sanskrit, which means to cultivate, and gom from the Tibetan, which means to become familiar with. Primarily, meditation is a matter of familiarizing ourselves with a clear and accurate way of seeing things, and of cultivating the good qualities that remain dormant inside us until we make the effort to bring them out. So let us begin by asking ourselves, what do I really want out of life? Am I content to just keep improvising from day to day? Am I going to overlook the vague sense of discontent that I always feel deep down when, at the same time, I am longing for well-being and fulfillment? We have become accustomed to thinking that our faults are inevitable and that we have to put up with the setbacks they have brought us throughout our lives. We have come to take the dysfunctional aspect of ourselves for granted, without realizing that it is possible to free ourselves from the vicious circle that is exhausting us. From a Buddhist point of view, every being has the potential for enlightenment, just as surely, say the traditional texts, as every sesame seed contains oil. Despite this, to use another traditional comparison, we wander about in confusion, like a beggar who is simultaneously both rich and poor, because he does not know that he has a treasure buried under the floor of his hut. The goal of the Buddhist path is to come into possession of this overlooked wealth of ours, which can imbue our lives with the most profound meaning. Transforming ourselves to better transform the world. Developing our own positive inner qualities is the best way to help others. At the beginning, our personal experience is our only reference point. But as we continue, it can become the basis for a much larger point of view that includes all beings. We are all dependent on each other, and none of us wants to suffer. Being happy in the midst of an infinite number of other beings who are suffering is absurd, if it were even possible. Seeking happiness for oneself alone is doomed to certain failure, since self-centeredness is the very source of our discontent. When selfish happiness is the only goal in life, life soon becomes goalless, wrote the French novelist Romain Rolland. Even if we show all the outward signs of happiness, we cannot be truly happy if we fail to take an interest in the happiness of others. Altruistic love and compassion are the foundations of genuine happiness. These remarks are not intended to be moralistic. They simply reflect reality. Seeking happiness selfishly is the best way there is to make yourself or anyone else unhappy. Some people might think that the smartest way to guarantee their own well-being is to isolate themselves from others and to work hard at their own happiness, without consideration for other people. They probably assume that if everybody does that, we'll all be happy. But the result would be exactly the opposite. Instead of being happy, they would be torn between hope and fear, make their own lives miserable, and ruin the lives of the people around them as well. In the end, just looking out for number one is a losing proposition for everybody. One of the fundamental reasons such an approach is doomed is that the world is not made up of independent entities, endowed with intrinsic properties that make them by nature beautiful or ugly, friends or enemies. Things and beings are essentially interdependent and in a constant state of transformation. The very elements that compose them only exist in relationship to each other. The self-centered approach of the ego continually runs afoul of this reality and only succeeds in creating frustration. Altruistic love, according to Buddhism, is the wish that others be happy, an attitude that consists of wishing others to be happy and find the true causes of happiness. Compassion is defined as the desire to put an end to the suffering of others and the causes of that suffering. These are not merely noble sentiments. They are feelings that are fundamentally in tune with reality. All beings want to avoid suffering just as much as we do. Moreover, since we are all interdependent, our own happiness and unhappiness are intimately bound up with the happiness and unhappiness of others. Cultivating love and compassion is a win-win situation. Personal experience shows that they are the most positive of all mental states and create a deep sense of fulfillment and wholesomeness. Research in neuroscience also indicates that among all kinds of meditations, those focusing on unconditional love and compassion give rise to the strongest activation of brain areas related to positive affects. In addition, the behavior they give rise to is intended to benefit others. In order for the deeds we perform for the sake of others to have the intended benefit, they must also be guided by wisdom, the wisdom that we can acquire through meditation. The ultimate reason for meditating is to transform ourselves in order to be better able to transform the world, or, to put it another way, to transform ourselves so that we can become better human beings in order to serve others in a wiser and more efficient way. It gives your life the noblest possible meaning. A universal effect. The primary goal of meditation is to transform our experience of the world. But it has also been shown that meditation has beneficial effects on our health. For the last 10 years, inspired by the catalytic activities of the Mind and Life Institute, dedicated to the collaboration between Buddhism and modern science, major American universities, such as the University of Wisconsin in Madison, Princeton, Harvard, and the University of California at Berkeley, as well as research centers in Zurich, Switzerland, have been conducting intensive studies on meditation and its long and short-term effects on the brain. Experienced meditators, who have meditated for between 10 and 60,000 hours, have demonstrated qualities of focused attention that are not found among beginners. For example, they are able to maintain more or less perfect concentration on a particular task for 45 minutes, whereas most people cannot go beyond 5 or 10 minutes before they begin making an increasing number of mistakes. Experienced meditators are able to generate precise targeted mental states that are enduring and powerful. Among other things, experiments have shown that the region of the brain associated with mental states like compassion exhibits considerably greater activity among persons who have long meditative experience than among those who have not. These discoveries demonstrate that certain human qualities can be deliberately cultivated through mental training. Such studies have led to the publication of several articles in prestigious scientific journals, establishing the credibility of research on meditation, an area which had not been taken seriously until then. In the words of Richard Davidson, a leading neuroscientist, "These studies seem to demonstrate that the brain can be trained and physically modified in a way that few people would have imagined." Other scientific investigations have also shown that you do not have to be a highly trained meditator to benefit from the effects of meditation, and that 20 minutes of daily practice can contribute significantly to the reduction of stress, whose harmful effects on health are well established. It also reduces anxiety, the tendency towards anger, which diminishes the chances of survival following heart surgery, and the risk of relapse for people who have previously undergone at least 2 episodes of serious depression. 8 weeks of meditation, of the type known as MBSR, for 30 minutes a day, significantly strengthens the immune system, reinforces positive emotions and the faculty of attention, and reduces arterial pressure in those suffering from high blood pressure, as well as accelerating the healing of psoriasis. MBSR, Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction, is a non-religious form of training based on Buddhist mindfulness meditation, which was developed in the United States hospital system more than 20 years ago by Jon Kabat-Zinn. It is now used in more than 200 hospitals for the palliation of post-operative pain and pain associated with cancer and other serious diseases. To what extent can we train our mind to work in a constructive manner, to replace obsession with contentment, agitation with calmness, hatred with kindness? 20 years ago, it was almost universally accepted by neuroscientists that the brain contained all its neurons at birth, and that their number did not change in adult life. We now know that new neurons are produced up until the moment of death, and we speak of neuroplasticity, a term which takes into account the fact that the brain evolves continuously in relation to our experience, and that a particular training, such as learning a musical instrument or a sport, can bring about a profound change. Mindfulness, altruism, and other basic human qualities can be cultivated in the same way. In general, if we engage repeatedly in a new activity or train in a new skill, modifications in the neuronal system of the brain can be observed within a month. What is essential, therefore, is to meditate regularly. Study of the influence of our mental states on our way of being and our health, which was once considered a purely eccentric notion, is now becoming a mainstream approach in scientific research. The increasingly powerful magnetic resonance imaging, MRI techniques, and sophisticated electroencephalograms, EEG, as well as magnetoencephalography, MEG, combined with the participation of experienced contemplatives, have led us towards a golden age of contemplative neuroscience. It is a fascinating prospect, and there is so much more to discover. A full life is not made up of an uninterrupted succession of pleasant sensations, but really comes from transforming the way we understand and work through the challenges of our existence. Training the mind not only makes it possible to cope with mental toxins like hatred, obsession, and fear that poison our existence, but also helps us acquire a better understanding of how the mind functions and gives us a more accurate perception of reality. This, in turn, gives us the inner resources to successfully face the highs and lows of life without being distracted or broken by them, and allows us to draw deep lessons from them. One of the great tragedies of our time is that we significantly underestimate our capacity for change. Our character traits remain the same as long as we do nothing to change them, and as long as we continue to tolerate and reinforce our habits and patterns, thought after thought. The truth is that the state we generally consider to be normal is just a starting point and not the goal we ought to set for ourselves. Our life is worth much more than that. It is possible, little by little, to arrive at an optimal way of being. I cannot emphasize enough how much meditation and mind training can change our lives and bring about an inner revolution, which is profound and peaceful, and affects the quality of every moment of our experience. Source of inspiration. Unfortunately, one of the main obstacles we face when we try to examine the mind is a deep-seated and often unconscious conviction that we're born the way we are, and nothing we can do can change that. I experienced this same sense of pessimistic futility during my own childhood, and I've seen it reflected again and again in my work with people around the world. Without even consciously thinking about it, the idea that we can't alter our minds blocks our every attempt to try. People I've spoken with who try to make a change using aspirations, prayers, or visualizations admit that they often give up after a few days or weeks because they don't see any immediate results. When their prayers and aspirations don't work, they dismiss the whole idea of working with the mind as a marketing gimmick designed to sell books. However, During my conversations with scientists around the world, I've been amazed to see that there is a nearly universal consensus in the scientific community that the brain is structured in a way that actually does make it possible to affect real changes in everyday experience. Yonge Mingyur Rinpoche.